Welcome to the new neighborhood. We are excited to highlight innovative early childhood work taking place in communities across the country.
In each episode, we talk to people who are reinforcing a sense of community, supporting young children and their families, and focusing on equity right from the start to create a generation where all children and their families thrive. I'm Kaylin O'Connor.
And I'm Sanaa Sharif, and we are your co-hosts for The New Neighborhood. So we've come to the end of season two of the podcast, and boo-hoo, I'm so sad. We wanted to take a little time to share updates from guests from past episodes and reflect just a little bit on this season.
So we're going to start with what we're calling the Where Are They Now segment. First time we've done it. So we reached out to past guests from season one and two and asked them to share any updates about the work that they had talked about on the podcast. We will put the links from the episodes that these folks were featured on in the show notes. So Susie Diaz from Yakima Valley shared that Peacekeepers and Yakima Valley Partners for Education co-hosted and organized food drives on the Yakima Reservation this summer and moved over 12,000 pounds of food, served 347 hot meals, and were joined by other community partners who provided robot kits, medical information and access, books, and more. They had to postpone one event because of the extreme heat in the Northwest this summer, but it sounds like a very successful summer.
Yeah, that's major. Definitely sounds successful. Molly Day from Multnomah County sent us a voice memo about what the passage of Preschool for All has meant in their community.
So much has happened in Multnomah County thanks to the passage of the Preschool for All measure. It feels like a new day on several big arenas. Not only do we have a whole bunch of new money in the early childhood system, and we have space now for hundreds and hundreds of families to send their children to preschool for free, and parents continue to have seats at influential tables. They continue to be a voice for how this measure is going to be implemented in our county. I mean, all that great stuff is happening. We're so excited. But there's this other piece that I just really wasn't expecting, and it has to do with the sheer size of the win. I think that the amount of money and the political clout that comes with having pulled this off has helped us address long-standing problems in building an early childhood system here. Like, I've often imagined us as beating with our puny little fists on great big heavy doors that block progress. And Preschool for All, I feel like they've just handed us a set of keys and said, go for it. For example, the city has a very Byzantine permitting process that is way complicated to navigate for English speakers, even much less anyone for whom English is not their first fluent language. And so childcare providers and preschool providers just cannot get expansion. They can't figure out how to expand their facilities. And we need lots of new facilities to do Preschool for All. So all of a sudden, we have a navigator within that permitting system. We have funds that providers can draw on in order to do that kind of expansion. It's like we have political clout. And when we ask for something, we can make it happen. And that's just super exciting. So thanks for checking in with us. We hope to have more good things to share. Appreciate you all and what you do. Thank you.
All right. So for Guilford County here in my home, Ready Ready has made great strides. We now have a project manager for the ages 3 to 5 design group. They have begun implementing several of the 10 strategies that they came up with, such as social emotional learning and early literacy. And so among that includes using Triple P parenting and educating parents on community resiliency, so the CREM method, just to help children work through their trauma, especially after the pandemic and losing some of those social skills. So they've got good work in the pipelines. In regard to the integrated data system, the Guilford Parent Leader Network was actually solicited for their opinions on the consent piece, how they felt about providing consent, how they felt about whether or not they could retract their consent. And it was just a really groundbreaking thing to let the parents be in from the ground floor. It's really important. Nothing about us without us. So
that's a great update. Thank you. Great work that's going on. And we know that some of our partners we had just spoken to so recently that they didn't share updates. Others are probably just busy doing the work and carrying on. So we're happy to share those updates and glad to know where they are now.
Yeah, they're doing the good work.
So we wanted to spend a little time just reflecting on this season and the experience of co-hosting this. It's been the first time hosting a podcast for both of us, and a lot has gone on during this time. So Sanaa, I just wanted you to start by sharing what this experience has been like for you.
Hi. Okay. So co-hosting the podcast has been, eye-opening. It has been an educational experience. It has been a place of growth for me, just learning how to engage with different people from different backgrounds, from a, I want to say from a relatable space. There's always that one area, the children, where we all relate, we all find our passion, we all find our why, and just to see it grow from there and bring it back to my community, to bring it back to the All-PLN, and to share it out with others has been really amazing.
That's great. I have also learned a lot during this time, and I would say just, you know, learning the ins and outs of what it really takes to make a podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I never really gave too much thought to the process behind it. So that's been really an educational experience for me. And then I think I just want to say the experience of co-hosting with you, Sanaa, has been really powerful for me. I think I've been, you know, advocating that parents need to be at the table for all kinds of work. But in reality, in my own day-to-day work, it hasn't been that often that I've worked this closely with a parent leader. And so I really appreciate what you brought to this podcast. I think we had topics and guests that we wouldn't have had if you hadn't had ideas and connections. In every episode, you asked questions that I might not have thought to ask, and you just brought your personal angle to things that I thought was really fantastic. And so I'm really glad that we decided to bring on a parent leader as a co-host. Mm-hmm. And I knew intellectually that that would be a good idea. Bring things to it, but really experiencing it has been really powerful. And I'm just really grateful for you for doing that. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about what it felt like to be a parent leader in this role.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to just throw around the word empowered, right? But what's underneath that word is that sense of I can be heard in this space. Not that I'm not heard in other spaces. I can get loud if I need to, right? But there's a whole other world out there that I can kind of let parents in the communities know people are watching, people are listening, people are interested in hearing what we need, giving it to us. And so from this platform, I can share that, and I can share that with the knowingness and with a lived experience. So I believe that it will allow other parents to kind of regain power in their neighborhoods and in their communities. So I do this for the people. So initially it was like, oh, I get to be on a podcast. Yay. But then it kind of morphed back into that organic space of, you know, this is for everybody. Every time I get into this space, this is for everyone who's listening. So I love it here.
That's great. That's great. And it's been, I mean, I think it's, there's value just in having two different perspectives in a conversation like this, in developing the topics and finding guests and writing questions, but also specifically having a parent leader does model to a lot of other people listening what that can really look like and what value you gain by having parents in the conversation and at the table and not just recipients of whatever service you're providing. So
I agree.
That's been great.
I totally agree. I believe that it lets people know that they actually can ask. It lets people know that it's okay to say what you need to say. It's okay to let people know the system is not working for me and my family, but you say you're here for me and my family. I believe that more parents should, I'm going to say, make the time to find a space to advocate in, find a space to speak in that's outside their home. You know, because you're always going to advocate in your safe space, but come outside of that comfort zone and kind of have those hard conversations, but with that confidence that it's okay for you to do this. This is okay. This is your right. This is your right. And I just want to point out that in the very beginning, you said, I'm a lily white woman. I have a zero ACEs score. I haven't been through anything. I don't even know what it's like for my lights to be cut off. And that was so authentic. And then from where I'm coming from, having experienced so many different things and yet still being able to make things happen, to keep it together, to raise my children in a safe, healthy way, to teach others how to advocate for themselves instead of being a victim of the experiences that I had. I believe that that duality has really been fruitful for this podcast as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for all of that that you're doing and for bringing yourself fully to this podcast. I think that's another thing we gain when we have parent leaders at the table, is that everybody feels a little bit more like they can be wearing their work hat and also be a full person, right?
Exactly.
It's not that you put all your family and personal stuff outside the door when you walk in, because parent leaders aren't going to do that, because that's not what they're there for. And so it helps those of us who are sitting at the table in a professional role also like humanize ourselves in how we bring ourselves to our work.
Yeah.
And I think that only benefits the work overall.
I agree. And as a parent yourself, you know, you still know that you can't necessarily shield your child from everything. So even having that knowingness that there are some spaces that we're gonna navigate and have a similar perspective on it as parents. I believe it's relatable. I believe it also reminds me that even though it's agency, it's still people at the agency with lived experiences of their own. With a parent perspective of their own. It's not just you're making policy and that's the end of it. So it's just a good, I love it.
Me too. Yeah. This has been one of my favorite things of all the projects I'm working on in the time that we've been doing this. I've just enjoyed it so much.
There have been a lot of themes across the episodes and guests. So we've had food insecurity being a recurring issue. We've learned about how some communities are providing their own food sources. And so I hope people were able to kind of gain some insight into how to maybe bring that into their own communities as well. And well-being has been a good theme, as well as the sense of community. So you want to say more about that?
Yeah, I was thinking about the fact that we call this podcast The New Neighborhood. And in a lot of ways, you know, that reflects that the way that early childhood systems thinking has evolved in recent years is really new, to focus on the less formal things that happen within communities to help parents raise their kids and to just help kids in general. And so that's where that title came from. But I think it was in the episode when we were talking with Zach Ben about Navajo traditions and the ways that he's living those traditions and helping to pass them on. And I thought, we're calling this the new neighborhood, when what we're really talking about is like how human beings live and have lived for centuries, if not millennia, of being dependent on your neighbor. That child rearing is something that matters to everyone in the community, whether you're actively raising your own kids or not. All of this stuff that is new in the early childhood policy space, because we've had these systems that just impose structures and ways of doing things that correspond with a lot of our modern lifestyle. But we also haven't really acknowledged that historically and currently, people live in community with other people around them, and we can lift that up through our systems and policies, or we can pretend it's not there. So I'm glad that our systems and policies are lifting that up more. And I hope that with this podcast, we're helping to elevate that conversation. But I did just have to reflect on that about our title being The New Neighborhood. So I know you have thoughts about that too, Sanaa.
I do. I get that. And so when I first heard The New Neighborhood, and then I saw the neighborhood in the visual that came out in the beginning, my mind just immediately went to A Wrinkle in Time, where you have this neighborhood with all these exact same houses and all the children are bouncing their balls the exact same way. And what it brought to mind immediately was these systems that are in place that disrupt the entire natural family structure, the natural family system, the natural sense of community, the natural village, if you will. And so throughout this entire season, we've just learned about how villages, how neighborhoods, how traditions have been reignited, realigned, people have linked together. And I don't know, I feel really, really recharged from it, honestly. All the things that I innately knew were normal and natural, right? That what our, like you said, what our societal norms are kind of go against that, right? Now in my mind, I'm going, oh yeah, it's okay to have a veggie garden in my backyard and eat from it. For some people, that might be the norm. For someone who grew up in the inner city, it might be unheard of. So that definitely would help to kind of have a solutions-based focus to a lot of these issues that we're having.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking to traditional ways of solving those kinds of problems of hunger and that parents need to do other things and need support to care for their children, all of that, our current mainstream cultural approach is so rigid with without that kind of give and take that we need in life.
It's almost mechanical, very dehumanizing in a lot of ways. And I really got to thinking, several problems are solved when you have a community garden. You have something for the children to do. You teach them how to fish, so to speak. So now they also know how to solve their own food insecurity problems. They have a chance to learn about their land, the difference between red clay versus rich soil. You know, there's just so many learning opportunities there. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. And just instilling an appreciation for vegetables and fruits that a lot of kids don't get otherwise. So I think that's really powerful.
I totally agree. I was really blown away at how Zach said that in the Navajo Nation, he and his family use heritage corn and turn it into something that a baby can healthily consume and, you know, pass and not have any type of digestive issues or anything. So they've really learned a way to refine what was already theirs and enhance their babies from the ground. So I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, I love that. Are any other like themes coming to mind for you that you want to talk about?
Specialty cheeses. Most of the time when I was mentally preparing for the conversation, I had this huge Super Mario style question mark on top of my head because I'm like, cheese, how does that come into the conversation, right? I know. And even with a diverse ethnic background and a diverse palate because of the way I was raised, I still did not make the connection. First of all, the fact that they're providing something that is traditional to certain cultures that may not be native to these lands. And then the fact that they know they need employees to make money, and they're making sure that employment is sustainable for their employees. They have created a village by themselves, just with this factory, this company, so that everyone is benefiting. It's not just about the bottom line, and it's not just about ignoring profit to help out the workers. It's about a cohesive working situation that benefits the children, the families, the company, the environment, the community, everyone. So I thought that was really dynamic.
Yeah. And I thought that episode was really interesting because those were the only folks we talked to on this podcast who aren't just about kids, right?
Yeah. That's not
like early childhood is not their focus, but they have seen how important it is to their business and their employees. So they're doing that work. And so it was just a different kind of conversation with folks who are coming at it from a business perspective and the human resources, you know, obviously very oriented to helping people thrive, but just a different perspective than what Most of our guests, Bryn, were there, professionals in the early childhood space.
Yeah.
I also, as a cheesehead myself here in Wisconsin, I found it so great that when we reached out to find a grantee of that project Growth that would be a good candidate to talk to on the podcast, it turned out to be a cheese company. I just appreciated that.
I can understand. I actually definitely can understand that. I also just want to go back to our very first episode. I was thinking back to Safe Families for Children, and it was something that was said during the specialty cheese episode. It was mentioned that when you send your children to childcare, you shouldn't be at work wondering if somebody's going to talk to them when they wake up in the middle of the night or make sure that they feel safe and secure, even though the parents are not readily available. And it made me think back to Safe Families for Children, because do you know how many people would benefit from knowing they have surgery and can send their children to loving arms that will make sure they get their meds when they need them, wake them up to use the bathroom, read bedtime stories. There are pets for emotional support, just lots and lots of love, even though you cannot be there in that moment. And when you get your children back, they're not damaged or traumatized, or their diets are not messed up, their routines are not off track, and all that's missing is mom and dad's love. And so when they come home, they're good as new. That just really, it really tugged on my heartstrings in so many ways.
Yeah, me too. I think that model of Safe Families for Children, again, is just kind of how community works or should work.
Yeah.
But for families that don't just naturally have that or don't have it where they live, it's those, that social network that can pick up and take care of your kids when you can't for whatever reason. Yeah. And I'm glad that program is there in so many communities, like to find people who are willing to be that person in another family's life and help the families find who can provide the kind of care their kids need. Just so wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So I believe that every community should look into maybe establishing something like that. If they have the bandwidth. I mean, you know, sometimes it's just not possible, but it's definitely a great model.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that might be all of the themes we wanted to touch on. Did you have another one?
No, I'm going to miss you.
I'm going to miss you too. This has been so much fun.
No.
And just, you know, talking to you every week or every other week to figure out the next plan has been so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way your mind works.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have really gained a solutions focused skill from working with you, a different perspective in how to approach, for example, some editing dilemmas or some timing dilemmas. And the reason why I'm naming that here in this episode is because I believe that it's important for people to realize that they can gain something from any interaction. If you come with a lens that's a learning lens, you will absolutely learn. And if you come to learn, it will make you a better teacher. So this has been really, that's why I said it's a growth experience for sure.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's such an important point. And, you know, every single person that you work closely with on a project, you can gain something from seeing like how they organize what they're doing and how they approach something. Maybe sometimes we learn like, I can see why that doesn't work.
yeah, thought it fit, but it doesn't. Like the parent-teacher conference at 7 p.m. when parents live over an hour away, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's so much to be gained from working in partnership with someone else and just getting their perspective and seeing how they do stuff. And I've just really appreciated everything that you've brought to this as well. So it's been a great experience.
Yeah. I am going to cry when we're done. I'm just letting you know.
Okay, before we wrap up, we want to thank the people who made this podcast possible.
First of all, Michael Biari, you made us sound awesome. And I appreciate it because most times I cringe at having to listen back to my voice.
Yeah, Michael's been amazing as an editor, really responsive and just able to take our notes on, we said this, but we need to plug this in from, you know, we started over. I do that all the time. Started over on a sentence. And he makes it sound so seamless. So we really appreciate that, Michael. Thanks for everything.
Oh, that's definitely a skill. I don't know. I think some people have to go to school just to even be able to conceptualize what Michael does so easily. I do want to thank Jessica and Joshua for just getting us out on time and doing the promotions and making sure that the visuals look great and always coming back for our feedback and just being great listeners. They definitely were critical. Additionally, the team at CSSP, Arthur, you rock, and Patsy and Annika and Fatima and Joan Lombardi for this amazing idea, for just having the heart to do this work to begin with.
Absolutely. Thank you all. We couldn't have done any of this without everybody on that team. So really appreciate everybody.
For sure. Well, guys, this is it. Thank you for listening to The New Neighborhood. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and additional information about some of the things we talked about today. And please subscribe to the podcast so you'll know when new episodes come out, with more insights into how communities are coming together to create new neighborhoods and support early learning and development. This limited series podcast is a production of the Center for the Study of Social Policy. For more information or to contact us, visit us online at www.cssp.org.